Mrs. Wickes. Heather, do you need a backjack?
No, it's just fine.
So, what's your little cat today? Jen?
Well, I've been practicing with not thinking. I wrote that up Sunday because part of my practice with, or my focus with the Socratic email class, that that's where my suffering happens, is the process of thinking. And I had zeroed in on the process within thinking of planning and remembering, but, you know, it's everywhere. And just watching how conditioning tells me it's just not possible. It's not possible not to think, to drop that. And also seeing how challenging it is, and that there's almost a sense of not knowing what that looks like. But at the same time, there's a sense that I do know what that what that experience is, and that even if I didn't, I'll find out. So it's just been really fascinating. It's like coming up against one of the things that conditioning says isn't possible.
So noticing, so the intention is not to think, is not thinking, zeroing on planning and what was the
planning and my mind just went blank.
That's good.
That's good. Like we're losing our minds. Yes.
Yeah, planning and remembering.
Planning and remembering. Yes. Right. Yes. but what I was really interested in what the several things about that process, right? Because what is not thinking?
Right.
Right, that's the first place that we go to in inquiry of what is it that's not thinking? And what does it mean not to plan and to remember? Because there's a way in which it is true, it is experientially true that we don't stop thinking. But that does not necessarily mean that you can't have the experience of not thinking.
Say that again, that you can't have?
That doesn't necessarily mean that not thinking is impossible.
Oh.
Right? I mean, but it is true. Several things about that. First of all, going to a place of inquiry about it and noticing there's sort of an intuitive sense that I can't control whether I think or not. Thinking happens. That's the insight of conditioning saying it's impossible. Because it is true, I can't stop thoughts from showing up in my mind.
Right.
You know, that's true. Yeah. And there's a way in which they don't have to have my attention. That's different.
Well, and along those lines, the guidance was, yes, I mean, of dropping, remembering, planning, and going to expanded awareness. In which case, that thinking, the conditioned thoughts, are part of the whole, a part of that expansion, that of much more.
Right. And if I'm translating what you're saying, if I can reframe what happens to us when we say drop the conversation, the conditioned acceptance of that is to stop thinking. But what drop the conversation means is, where's your attention? Which is what you're saying. I'm not attending to the thoughts, I'm attending to the awareness that contains the thoughts. That those are two different things.
Yeah, it really does get into the semantics, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, but the interesting part is, in order for me to even get, for us to have this conversation, there has to be, okay, here's my focus, here's the narrowing of the focus, here's what I'm seeing about it, And then sort of the reflection of that to what's true about that and how can you deepen that experience of what you're seeing. Right? Because there is a distinction between dropping the conversation and redirecting the attention from thoughts.
Yeah, and I guess...
based on who's receiving it is what I mean.
Yeah. And I think where I get stuck or conditioning catches me, confusion comes in, which I always think of as being conditioned. You know, that's where conditioning resides. One of the places is that describe the difference between expanded awareness and thinking. I think that's what you're wanting to too. And it doesn't matter in a way.
It doesn't matter in a way. And as you said, you have the experience of it. So one way to practice with that is I notice that the attention is on planning, or I don't remember, or I recall that, right? Attention is registering that. Mm-hmm. Now, if I redirect the attention to my breath, and I'm aware of my breath, I'm aware of the bird song, and I'm aware of, I don't remember that, is that really thinking? Right?
Yeah. And what I just saw in that is, it, in a way, that question doesn't matter.
That's right.
It doesn't matter. It's where the experience is coming from. Is the only way I know to say that. Is it, I know the experience of being present. I know what that feels like. And I know what it feels like to be in conditioned thinking stories. And so, in putting it in other words, it's just looking at where I want to direct the attention so that I have one experience versus another, or that expanded awareness is possible.
Or have an experience. Have a experience. An experience.
Yeah. Boy, it really gets into... Mm-hmm. The description, and
which is why we look to our experience to say the words, and search for it.
Yes,
because it's not canned. If it is, you know where you're looking.
Right. And I think that's part of where the struggle comes from. That sometimes it's not, at least in this situation, it's not that familiar.
Uh-huh.
The looking at this particular thing is not that familiar. And so it is a search for what is that experience and what are the words that best describe that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just been, it's been a very helpful practice.
Yeah.
Because it's opening up, for me, it's opening up a lot. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say.
Yeah, that what I hear you saying that, right, Jan, is that if you're in inquiry, then you're in the process of seeing. If you're in the process of seeing, there's many things to see.
Seems sort of endless.
Yeah. And it basically short circuits the what do I have to see, or what am I supposed to see, or what I should be seeing. It shifts the focus from the content to the process.
Mm-hmm.
And so my experience is I see a lot because I'm in the process of seeing.
Oh, that's really critical.
Right?
It's the process of seeing, mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Margaret.
I've been also looking at what I'm looking at around the email class, because what arose for me was seeing an experience of resistance that happens a lot, but conditioning calls it, or ego calls it, very minor, unimportant, because because it's about, it's not about practice, right? It's about, or it's not about coming to the Zen Center or going on retreat or that kind of, which is what I saw was it's not that, and that it's like, it has, well, in the same way we've said we don't question brushing our teeth or whatever, we just do it, right? That's how, it's almost like I thought I had done this, or that it was, I mean, it is a part of, it's what my heart wants, is to just, if there's a practice offering, just say yes, and just, I'm just going to do it. And it feels like that path away from that is just, the door is closed. You know, I'm not going to look in that direction that's going to say no to those things, right? It's like there's a wall there. That
there's much
built.
Training there.
Yes, much training there. Yes, it's very, it's like, why co-therapist? It's not a place to go. It's, and I've, you know, seen how it's developed over the years. It's been an amazing journey to have that conclusion or that. Well, what I feel now is like, well, that's where I am now anyway, still. Who knows? But then what I was seeing about this other resistance is like conditioning wants to put it in a category of, oh, this is so minor. It's like what it says is, oh, you could do that another time or later, or we don't have to do that now. But what happens is a story gets built up that I'm not worth it. I see that because it's something I want to do to care for this being. It doesn't happen, and I know that, and it's like stacking up a bunch of, they're quote little, but they're not little. They're part of a story that's big in a way.
Yes. Well, it's an important insight, right? Because what dropped in when you said that is, in the dimension of, so in the dimension of what is important, you've triumphed over ego. So in the domain of what's trivial, that ego win, right? That's how the choice is being framed.
Yeah.
Right? What you've seen though is it is not trivial, because even though the task doesn't seem trivial, life and death, the consequence of letting ego win there is life and death, because it is a domain of suffering for the human being in the realm of she's not worth it.
Yeah.
Now, we could say that in the content realm of practice, resistance can't get you. Because there was a time I project in all our lives where saying yes to practice was not something that came easily.
Mm-hmm.
For the same reason.
Yeah.
It's what your heart desires, so let's make sure she suffers by not going with her heart desire and then making her suffer by feeling bad because she can't do what she wants to do. The process hasn't changed. It's just shifted over to a content where it can get you versus what you've trained with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where it's something that takes 2 minutes.
Where it takes 2 minutes.
Or something as small as that can be, you know, just a...
The point is, right, Margaret, I think we say this all the time. After being a practitioner for a while, there's nothing outside the realm of practice.
Yes.
Right? We train with everything. We train with resistance around a tooth brushing, to resistance around saying yes to a practice offering in the same way. Because our highest intention is to make a choice for freedom over suffering in every moment.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm not making that choice in any realm of content, I'm not making that choice in any realm of content. It doesn't matter whether this says it's a high, big content or small content. At some level, you want to call it out to say the only reason there is an inequality or a comparison is because I'm listening to a voice in my head say that.
Yeah.
Intrinsically, the level of suffering from one and the other is the same for you.
It really is. I mean, you know, when you were just describing that, what I went to was this time that I saw, or I heard the voices saying, oh God, I have to get up. Do I have to get up? And it was like, wait a minute, I want to get up. I'm alive. I want to get up. And it was just gone, just like that. But I don't want to live from that. And that's when right. I see that, when I get it, that's what's happening, it's really clear. And so with these little things, I saw that. And I just saw, you know, wait a minute. I love this person. I want to take care of her.
Yes.
And we're going to do this.
That's right. And so you shift the attention. That's a very beautiful strategy, and it requires a lot of paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you have to go, okay, well, the voices are saying that this is, it's going back to our commitments workshop, or what am I training with? The voices are saying this is trivial and this is important. So I'm going to train against comparing.
Mm-hmm.
Comparison doesn't exist. It's an ego place not listening to that voice. But when I look at it, really, what do I want to do? I want to save this human being. So we shifted from an ego board of trivial versus important to high stakes for this human being's salvation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't matter if it says it's small or large, because you've reframed the choice as, is this human going to suffer or is this human not going to suffer? And there's clarity to access the training thread that makes you go yes to a practice offering. Right? Instead of going the resistance route,
yes.
You've already gone the resistance route in that way and trained yourself to always choose the human being around the content of a practice offering, which is available to you as a training track around any place of resistance in your life.
Yeah.
Because it always comes down to, is the human suffering or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a motivation for not letting her suffer, I'm going to choose it. I know how to do that.
Yeah, and it just seems like everything we've been doing, the daily practice and being together and all that, it just enhances all of that awareness.
Yes.
Around, you know, what Sangha wants, what I want, what, you know.
Life wants.
Life wants.
What the heart wants.
Yeah.
And therefore being able to create the grooves or use the grooves to make the choice where you have the choice.
Yeah, feeling like it's just gliding along versus, or not, just not, you know, shutting the door in a different way.
I'm not gonna do that. Can't get me that way anymore because I'm taking a different route.
Yeah.
A route where I've already beaten you, so don't try.
thank you.
Phil and then I. So, Sherry wrote something in the email class to somebody else that, in a response, that just, I thought, that's it.
Uh-huh.
And it was, there was a little more to it than this, but a basic thing was what ego, I guess, wants us to do awareness, not be awareness.
Mm.
And so I was looking at that in relationship to what I look at a lot, and it seems like a lot of what the background noise is that goes on is like, well, I didn't know this at all. Then I started looking, you know, using that model there, just those words, to look at it. And it would be, if I put it into words, I didn't hear those words before until I started writing them down, was that what the way I'm pushed is to, well, the thing I wrote down was that ego says I'm not taking advantage of everything I could take advantage of in practice. And that, you know, there's all this maybe I shouldn't be doing and maybe I should be doing something else or vice versa. Or and I think taken to its nth degree, it would not allow me to do anything. It wouldn't want me me to really do well. See, that's what it's trying to get me to do, I think, is do awareness, do practice instead of just living it, just being it.
Mm-hmm.
And but then, of course, it'll come back in around this side and say, yeah, but, you know, maybe you should be doing a whole lot more. But there's the doing, so.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm tracking. I thought I was tracking, but you went somewhere that I didn't expect you to go.
Okay,
so
well,
let me try to see if I'm with you. What I heard you say is, we're not trying to do awareness, be awareness was the insight. Right, and so you're watching the way conditioning is pushing you is to do more. You should be doing more practice. You should be doing more practice.
Well, that's what it would say, and I think that's kind of the push that makes me go to a place occasionally. It's nothing like it used to be, but occasionally of. I'm not doing this good enough. I'm not enough.
It doesn't translate into doing more practice. It translates into feeling bad.
Yeah, kind of like doubt or something.
Doubt, yes.
Yeah, I think that's what it translates into. Yeah, yeah. Because I haven't changed I haven't made anything different, partly because I'm not sure if there needs to be done anything done differently.
Well, the point you're making is, if I'm practicing being aware, then I'm aware that it's telling me that.
Yeah.
I don't have to believe the content that I'm actually not doing something or not doing enough.
Right.
That's the insight, right?
Yeah.
If I'm being awareness, then if the voice is telling me to do, then I leave being aware in order to do if I believe the voices and do them.
Yeah.
In fact, I think this is what you're saying. The insight is, when I recognize the voice telling me that I should do more, I am being awareness.
I'm being awareness because I hear that, yeah.
That's right. That is the practice.
Right.
Not, I have to do something in order to do practice.
Right, right. But then, like what I said is, and it's true. That's exactly it. And it just keeps like coming in another way with, but.
Are you sure you're doing enough?
Yeah. You know. And then so there's the do again.
Yes.
I know.
And
I've seen that, so
yes.
I'm aware of it all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there was another response in the email class where someone was attempting to be. And then watching the duality afterwards to say, okay, was I being or was I not being?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That is the movement that you're pointing to, where there's a default exit ramp for being because we're listening to a doing thought.
Yeah, to question whether I'm being.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that is the movement into not doing practice.
Right. Yes, because then I'm questioning, or the doubts, you know, and all that.
Well, it's basically, if practice is being aware of where the attention is in every moment, then if you're aware of the conversation, you're practicing. If I'm believing the conversation and getting identified with it,
mm-hmm.
I'm not practicing.
All right, yes.
And so you can actually tell that voice, I mean, to me, what it comes down to when we look at it at this level, right? So anytime I'm listening to a voice that says I should be doing more practice, I have left the moment in order to attend to the voice that says I should do more practice, which is really not doing practice.
Right. So basically, it wouldn't want me to read a book, you know, wouldn't want me to do anything that's other than what it would consider doing practice.
That's right. Life becomes very small.
Yeah.
And very unenjoyable.
Right, and I really enjoy life. And the only thing I can really go back to, you know, the saving grace in it all is, there's always this tremendous love and gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Now that couldn't be there, I don't think, I were, you know, wrapped up in conditioned mind.
Yes,
it's
well,
not there when I'm wrapped up in conditioned mind.
You make two different points. So there's a way in which we train, right? We can tell that that entire conversation is an attempt to get the attention on the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So here you are trying to be present in meditation. How do you get out of the training to be present is distraction,
mm-hmm.
right? So if it can get you to believe that not reading a book is doing practice, then it gets us to believe that it's the what, not the how,
mm-hmm.
that it's all about. So doing practice is a what. Are you meditating? Are you recording and listening? Have you signed up for every opportunity there is? Is there
mm-hmm.
a stewardship opportunity that you're in? Are you sure that that's all? It's all the what. The
mm-hmm.
whats are supposed to define
mm-hmm.
whether or not you're practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it can convince you that reading a book or not reading a book is practice versus not practice, or watching a movie and not watching a movie is practice, it continues to reinforce the ability to associate practice with a what, not a how.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's not so. I mean,
and that
I
is not
I
so.
Just, I mean, at that part, I really know that we can do whatever we're doing with awareness, and that's practice.
Yeah.
And it's funny how so strong it can get, though, sometimes, you know, even when I don't believe it, you know.
Well, but that's how, what you're seeing is, it can't get you to stop practicing, Phil. It can't.
No,
because participating. You're signed up for everything. You come for every group. You do all your meditations. You record and listen. There's no way it can say, hey, Phil, don't do this. It can't get you anymore from that direction.
But
it can certainly.
You can do it more.
You can do it more. Are you sure you are? Right?
You
it's a deflection. You can do it better. Exactly.
That's what it was. Just go ahead.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, most of the time it's just fine. But then it'll just kind of like sneak
yeah.
right in there.
Because, and this is, we say this about conditioning all the time, it gets you where you love the most.
Yes.
What do you care about the most in your life? What will you fall for? What will you be vulnerable to?
This is the only thing.
It's the only thing. You've given up your whole life to be a practitioner.
Yeah.
Are you sure you are a good practitioner? By doing enough?
Sure.
That's right. Well,
that's fine.
Huh?
Well, how can we be sure of any of it, you know?
That's also true. And we are.
And we are. Well, you know, if for me, it comes down to what I mentor or whatever you want to say is that you can say, keep your eye like St. Paul might say, keep your eye on the goal. I mean, there's no goal, I know, but keep your, in other words, keep present. Stay
yeah.
a present to presence and to realize, I guess that's where I'm practicing, realize the presence. I know I'm present. We're sitting right here.
Yeah.
But to realize the presence. And to me, that's where maybe you could say the work is, but there's nothing I can do about it, but
well, yes,
be present.
Right. And what I heard you say in that, Phil, which I think is the salient point, is it's not what but how, right? And so if I'm in the domain of what, there's a quantifiable what. Only in the domain of how much practice is enough.
Right.
In that domain, you can count. Well, I'm doing this, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing this. I'm spending 7 hours and 22 minutes in practice opportunities.
I'm in the not remembering.
Well, that's right, right? In the domain of conditioning, everything is quantifiable
uh-huh.
because it's a what. And so there's 100% that you can do, and you're only doing 40, and that's not enough.
Right.
I wish it was that clear, but it isn't.
No,
but the question itself is only relevant
mm-hmm.
in that domain.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get here, you're here. There's no determining whether how many practice opportunities and whether you're enough or not in this moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the relevance of that question is also something that we can lose interest in.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Because as you said, that love and that gratitude and the thing that makes you a practitioner who's wholeheartedly devoted to capitalizing on every opportunity to practice there is,
mm-hmm.
is never going to be stopped by a voice that says, hey, are you doing enough practice?
I know, it's not, it wouldn't stop.
It wouldn't, it wouldn't. Yeah. And
it's
so.
It's just like, okay, there's the voice that's saying.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. You know, and it keep going back to, you know, that poem that St. Teresa had and St. Francis had, you know, that when they had their ecstasy, whatever, vision, whatever it is, where, you know, the divine says to one of them, love me, and the other one, enjoy me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
At least that's how I see it.
Yeah, neither of those are in the question, have you done enough?
No.
No mystic poet ever had God say to them, have you done enough?
Right. Yeah, which reminds me, I love that last musings. I think that's really pointing at a lot of this.
Yeah.
You know, just to be, you know, skipping around like hobbits or something,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah. That is also an opportunity.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I don't really know where to start. I'm just feeling in it.
Yeah, that's a good place. Well, where you are is always the best place to start. Yeah,
okay.
You're in it.
I'm in it.
Yeah. Can you say more about what does that mean? What is that? What are you hearing? What are you feeling?
Kid is really suffering and I can't do anything to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a fraud because my whole work is around helping parents and supporting parents, and I'm falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel groundless.
Mm-hmm.
And today in particular, I just feel beaten down and I don't know how to get out.
What would you like to hear, Anna? What would feel good for you to hear? What would help you?
That there is a way out of this.
Uh-huh.
That my suffering right now and my kid's suffering right now isn't forever.
Uh-huh.
And that it's not my fault.
It's not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your fault.
And that I'm doing the best I can.
That you're doing the best you can. Yeah.
That I'm enough.
That you're enough. It's all right. It's okay to feel the way you're feeling.
Yeah. And I guess I keep thinking that if I just keep sitting every morning and doing my recording and listening and showing up, that it will get better, and it just feels like it's all getting worse and harder.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm feeling more and more lost and unsure of what to do and how to help.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just this cycle.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You can't do anything to prevent what your kid's going through. Right? What do you feel like you can offer your child?
I would like to say love and acceptance, but I'm finding it really difficult to accept everything that she's going through. I'm finding it, I'm noticing that it's hard for me to accept her depression and anger and this darkness that I'm seeing from her that frightens me.
Uh-huh. But that those are two different things, right? It frightens you, but that doesn't mean you're not accepting it. It's not what you want.
It's not
what I want. It's not what you want for her.
No.
And it's not what you want to face.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you don't see that she's depressed.
Yeah, I see it.
Right? Do you see the distinction?
Try saying it again.
Well, there were several things we just did, right? The first thing we did was for you to be able to know what you needed. This is what I need. I need reassurance and I need to be told these things.
Yeah.
And that movement of looking in internally and saying what I need and for having that reflected back to you, you said you don't know what to do about this. That's what to do about it. There's nothing to do about it.
It doesn't feel like enough.
Okay, so let me go back. So go back to that person who doesn't feel like it's enough.
Uh-huh.
What does she need to hear? What is it to her that it doesn't feel like enough? What doesn't change?
Well, feels like I'm just talking to myself while my kid is like withering away.
Uh-huh.
Like I have to do something.
Uh-huh. What would happen if you did something?
It would make everything better.
Uh-huh. It would make everything better.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I say it out loud, it doesn't resonate. Like I just led a workshop for parents on how you can't save your kids from their suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sitting here telling you that's what I feel like I have to do.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So when you say it out loud and you watch yourself say that, where do you go with it?
Well, then I modify it and I'm like, okay, I can't save her, but I wish I knew how to support her better.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel like she feels supported.
How do you know that?
I don't know. She doesn't tell me anything.
Mm-hmm. So here's a couple of things, right? I think you've disidentified a little bit. Would that be true?
Yeah.
Good. Good, because, only because what I want to tell you, what I wanted to show you or facilitate you through is that that's what's going on here, right? When you're in the workshop telling parents how to assist and support their children, you're not identified with the person who's frightened and scared and unable to deal with her own emotions.
Right.
It doesn't mean that all of those aspects of you don't coexist. There's someone who's frightened. There's a mother who's afraid for her kid. There's the kid who's afraid of having to deal with the situation she feels over her head in.
Yeah.
And there is the facilitator who can facilitate the workshop. Now, the fact that we're all of those things is summarized to us by a voice in our head that says you're a fake, because here you are falling apart while you're leading a workshop. But that's putting two things together that aren't necessarily things that go together. You can be the person who's facilitating the workshop, and you can be the person who is afraid for her child. And that person who's afraid for her child is the person who you can look to assist other people who are feeling fear for their kids. So when we're identified, it all gets mushed together,
yeah.
Right? And so the first step in facilitation and working with the recorders to get in touch with her, and this is what you did and there's nothing wrong with you, right? Here's this person who's really suffering. What does she need? Become the compassion that can assist her and get her all the reassurance she needs in order to feel like it's all right for her. That is the only thing we can ever do. That's what we do in this practice. You know, there's nothing we can solve on a content level because nothing gets solved on a content level. You cannot make it better for her. That's the wisdom that's coming from you. You can't prevent the suffering that's happening to your child. You can certainly take some, you can certainly do something to assist the person who's suffering here by giving her what she needs in order to go through a challenging time. And the more that we can be there for ourselves, the more we can be there for someone else in unconditional love and acceptance. You cannot have the frightened child in you try to be unconditionally loving and accepting of a frightened child out there. That's not where you need to look in order to assist that person.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I can see that.
And so that's really the process of being with the recorder all the time. You cycle through those places. You find yourself in it, talk about in it, and see if somebody can reassure you and give that person who's in it a way to get whatever they need. And by doing that, you disidentify from that. Right? Which gives you a little bit more perspective and distance to get here and see how things are. She's suffering. I wish as a mother she didn't. I want to be as loving and supportive as I can of her. I don't know how to be that. How can I feel supported enough that I can be supporting so I don't come from a place of deprivation of not knowing how to support her because I don't feel supported? Do you get that connection?
Yeah.
Yeah, if I feel unloving towards someone, I can be sure that I'm in a conversation and conditioned mind that makes me feel unloved. The first place I have to go is to go get back to center where I'm in relationship with love and acceptance before I can expect to be loving outside.
Well then, okay, I'll just tell you where that takes me. There's such a backlog of not feeling supported that I'll never get there. I mean, that's the thing that I hear in my head is, well, if you have to go get supported for yourself so that you can then support your kid, that's going to take forever.
Okay, close your eyes.
Okay.
So do you feel unsupported?
Like in this moment?
Yeah, just tune into what you just said right now, that you don't feel like you know how to support your daughter.
Right.
Yeah?
Right.
I don't know how to support her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you would let yourself look at what would feel supportive when you feel that way?
When I feel like I don't know how to support my daughter?
Yeah.
I guess for somebody to say, yeah, what she's going through is really scary.
Yeah.
And
what she's going through is really scary.
Uh-huh. And it's really hard.
It's really hard.
It's hard to know what to do.
It's hard to know what to do. Now, open your eyes for a second. Did you feel supported when that happened?
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need. You look to, what do I need in this moment? That's given to me. I don't need to go back and get all the support for all of those things. I just need the support in this moment. Yeah? But that's why, you know, Autumn, that's why it's a practice. It feels completely... How long have you been doing practice?
Since August.
Yeah. Yeah?
Yeah.
So this is the opportunity to accept that you're in survival.
Mm-hmm.
And however much practice you can bring into that to find compassion for yourself and to find compassion for the other person, that's good. You know, it's going to be messy. It's not going to be perfect. You're going to fall apart. But it's through that process of bringing practice into that, or that into practice, that'll allow you to get stronger in having compassion and support for yourself and for your child. What this is saying is you should have been perfect by now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's definitely.
Yeah, it's hateful. And that somehow your lack of perfection is going to impact that person's ability to deal with whatever they're going through right now. I mean, if you look back at all of the hard places you've been, you know, you've been through a whole lot. What would you want more than anything else in the world is somebody to say, no matter what, I'm just on your side. No matter how hard it is for me, I don't know how to help you. I don't know how to make you feel better. I don't know how I can alter the circumstance for you, but you know that you've got one person who's always on your side, always there, however you want. I'm here. I'm here for you. On your terms, not on my terms. And if it gets to be about me, I'll go do my stuff so that I can come back to you and be here on your terms. She's allowed to fall apart. It is hard.
Who are you talking to? Both of us?
You.
Oh, okay.
I don't know her.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. That's what she needs. She does not need a voice in her head telling her she's a fake. As little as your daughter or child needs to hear that she's screwing up.
Yeah.
You wouldn't offer that to her. That's why you don't want to let Autumn have that same experience.
Well, I think the thing is that I've been focusing so much on trying to like fix everything and make everything better that it's part of why there's this distance now between us, because I don't think that makes me a super safe person for her.
Exactly. Which is good to see, right?
Yeah.
So that's why it's all a workshop. If you could have rehearsed every parent issue possibly, then it would be different. But you can't. You are thrown into it.
Yeah.
I might be the most practiced person in facilitation, and I get thrown off the deep end into a situation that I haven't practiced with, all my facilitation skill goes out of the window. And the first thing I feel is completely beaten up because, hey, you're such a great facilitator.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
Well, I got identified.
Yeah.
And I got scared because I don't know how to facilitate in this situation. This is completely unexpected. So I get to work that out. I get to find my way in that. I get to be supported in how I am in this situation. Not crucified because something that I was good at is not available to me in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the gift in the situation. That I'm unconditionally accepted, not because I'm a perfect facilitator, but because I'm an imperfect facilitator who didn't have access to what made her who she was.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That we don't get dropped into dark places because I think we get dropped into dark places so that we can unconditionally accept ourselves and allow ourselves to be the most vulnerable we can be and surrender everything that we are in order for something else to save us.
Like what?
Unconditional love. And when I give up at the bottom of the abyss, I say, I can't do this anymore. That's when something gets done for me.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that circumstance is for me to give up, not to want to be in control, not to believe I can fix it, not to believe that I can be a superstar and make something different, but to go, no, I can't. That's when the wisdom and the love and the strength that is needed to be in the situation arises, because it's not stopped by the identity that wants to be in control of it all and can fix it. But we just learned that, you know, this is a hard place. You started out fixing it. There's distance. You get to say, oh, I'm so sorry, I tried to fix this. Clearly that wasn't working. That's how you build the conversation. She may not respond.
Yeah.
But at least she knows that you're safer because you know what's going on for you. That's safety, right?
Yeah.
You can always expect someone to say what's going on for them.
Okay.
Does it assist you to start somewhere?
What do you mean?
That the only thing you've got to do through this whole thing, at least for a little while, is to make sure that Autumn is taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
That whatever she needs, she's completely supported and reassured and feels like she's not alone.
Yeah.
Everything else can follow. That allows you to be the person who can be available.
Sounds simple enough.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing to do. Because it goes against everything that we're conditioned with.
Well, and I noticed that over the course of either, like, just, you know, the last few weeks, it's sort of all been building, and the lens, like, there's this one issue, but now I notice that everything else feels worse and harder, too. It's like the lens gets, everything gets dimmer and smaller, and now what were minor complaints about other parts of my life are growing and getting bigger and bigger, and it's like a, feels like this cancer that's spreading. Like, now I can, you know, think of my whole life as falling apart instead of I'm having a hard time in this area.
Yeah. And so the translation for that, if you're disidentified enough to hear it, is simply that when you're in a place of vulnerability, then you're much more vulnerable to hearing everything is wrong.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Right? The every voice is going to tell you in this domain and in this domain and in this domain, it's wrong.
Yeah.
And you'll believe it because you've already in the process of there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So now everything is wrong.
Yeah. That was the whole retreat.
Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's available and sometimes it isn't, right? That's why we come here. There's a little bit of perspective and one place that you can practice with it. And that's what I'm going to hold on to, that thread. Sarah.
I just listening tonight to a lot of the different things I've heard, it kind of reminds me of that blog post of Sherry's about the world of opposites.
Uh-huh.
You know, how you could almost go after the message or take the message that conditioning's giving you and look for the opposite of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminds me of that someone said about, you know, that being in a place of expanded awareness, that it, if you can add the opposite to whatever the conditioned thing is, that there's liberation in it.
Uh-huh.
So for me today, I was talking to someone about this very familiar conditioned story about fear, you know, danger. It's danger.
Yes, the abstract word that means so much without saying anything.
Anything at all. And this person said to me, actually, this particular thing you're afraid of, you have a unique ability to spot it. that other, you know, you have the exact, like, you have the puzzle piece that fits into this thing so perfectly. And it was just so freeing, like, the, and it's reminding me of what you're saying, like, it's not, it's the opposite of what you think.
Aha, uh-huh, I see. So, it's the reframe that assisted you, right? It's the disidentification. If I'm looking through the lens, then I believe it and I'm afraid. But right, if I can step outside and look at the lens,
right,
and it's framed for me as your unique ability to do something.
Yeah, like you're, what this person was saying was this thing that you're afraid of not spotting, you are going to spot it before someone
yes,
else sees it.
Because you're so programmed to do that.
Well, no, just because it's actually built into your experience, your life experience.
Uh-huh.
It's something
yeah,
you have experience with and therefore know.
I see. So you've had the experience with and therefore you know. So so I see what you're saying, that what conditioning is telling you is you have to be afraid of this because it's going to blindside you.
Right.
And what is true is actually no, you're actually going to spot it because you know it so well. Another way of saying this is only the person who's afraid of being egotistical, it will never be egotistical.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone who's afraid of being unkind will never be unkind because they're always on the lookout for not being kind.
Right?
Right? And so really your kindness is cast as your fear of being unkind as opposed to
kindness. You have kindness. You have this thing, right?
Yeah.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And there was something else about it.
It's a negative image, right?
Right. It's the negative
image.
It's the negative. And
yeah.
But what this person said to me that I thought was so interesting was the fear. Do you know where the fear is coming from? You're not acknowledging that you have this ability.
Uh-huh.
It's the failure to see that you're safe. That's making you feel you're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense. Where, like, it's like it's an inside. You know what I thought of when I heard it? Of, you know, I've never been able to watch horror movies. Like, but I get the gist of them, right? Which is somebody's walking in blindly into the situation, and everybody in the audience is like, no, not that room. Like, don't go in there, you know. And we're really focused on the ogre or whoever it is that's going to do this thing. But the real problem is the person being unaware, right?
Yes.
It's the lack of awareness of the fuller thing. And that's what this person was saying to me. You're getting scared because you're not seeing yourself clearly.
Yes, and the way I'm completely with how it landed for you, but the way, so if I
yeah,
reframe it in our language,
yeah,
if I am separate from the situation, if I'm identified with being separate from the situation, I'm not in the situation.
Right?
Right? So if
right,
I'm identified with, I don't see this, my experience has to be fear, because I'm not in touch with, I am seeing it.
Right.
That's
right.
So the ego is fear because it's always not being in the situation. It's being outside the situation without knowing what the situation is.
Right.
The experience,
don't like that.
Yeah. The experience of ego is the person walking into the room unaware that they're going to meet the ogre.
Right.
But what we contain is that attention on that ego process as our life experience, while all of awareness is aware of walking into the room.
Right.
So if, as soon as I switch my attention from
right,
being the person in the movie walking into the room to the audience,
right,
because both are happening to me in the same time, I stop being afraid
right,
because I've gotten in touch with the situation.
Right, and what's so amazing is, and I heard it earlier tonight, is that's always there.
That's always
that
there.
That awareness is always there. We can be in the tunnel.
Yes.
And see like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But
that's
the
right,
whole thing is always there.
And all you need is that. That's why we record and listen when you're in the tunnel.
Right.
Because when I'm talking about feeling afraid or when I'm talking about whatever, what's happening is the attention is looking to get back into some place from which there is a reporting of what's going on. I have to reference awareness in order to be able to talk about my experience, and now I've gone from being the person in the tunnel to being the person in the audience.
Right, to seeing it, to pulling it back, and there's, and it's there, it's right there, it's always right
absolutely
there.
It's a miraculous process, it's a shift in attention.
Yeah, yeah.
From between two processes.
Right, right, and it's just that little trick of, it's the opposite of what you think. So helpful, because you're like, okay, well, it could just be a thought exercise at first, but
yes,
then you're like, eh, nope, I'm getting closer, it's getting bigger.
Yeah, that's the training part for me, right, Sarah? I mean, I know, I have trained myself to know that I have to pick up the recorder and talk about it at certain, like I can feel the identification and go, I think I know what this is. But in order for me to be completely out of it, I have to articulate it from unconsciousness to conscious awareness. Because as long as I'm only peripherally aware of the identification,
you're out of it.
I'm still sort of letting it operate me. I have to come to full conscious awareness so that I'm in the audience watching the person go into the room, not the person going into the room vaguely feeling scared.
Right. But it's partly for what you were just saying a moment ago. It's partly like just articulating it, putting it on the recorder, is bringing yourself back into union with yourself.
That's exactly
because
right.
There you are. You're saying, here, this is what's happening right this second. That's all that. And then boom, you're reunited.
Yes. And your awareness comes back to more than, okay, I can see the ogre.
Right.
Or I shouldn't be going into this room. Or, you know what, I can hear the music playing in that room, maybe I should be going to that room instead. All of the stuff that's not in the tunnel becomes available.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now I'm here.
Yeah. And
for really what it is.
Right. And this, there's something in this space out here, right, in this latter space that's very, I think someone said earlier, like it's just got a different frequency feeling to it. There's gentleness, kindness, love there.
Yeah.
In that all-inclusive thing. Yeah.
Thank you. Michael.
I had just that experience tonight that you were describing where I wanted to record something, and even before I recorded, there was like a joy or a satisfaction of knowing that I know to record,
mm-hmm.
That I do it regularly, but also when I can sense something is off or not clear, or, and it was just, I guess it was kind of a joy to know that that skill is there, that that habit is there.
Yeah.
And then I recorded, and then, you know, things became clearer, mm-hmm. clearer,
mm-hmm.
and, but it was just interesting to see that even before I started to record. It was like I'd already gotten what I knew I was going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, which is perhaps simply the recognition that nothing's going to stop me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the, I don't know if this is what you were pointing to, but it's when I hit the shot across the net, that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a perfect shot.
That's good, yes.
It's
yes.
Simply in the shot itself that the joy is.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's what it is. I did that. I know how to do that. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah.
That's a skill earned.
Yes.
And so I can rejoice in the mastery.
Yes. And I remember a kind of like a version of that sort of before several years ago, or it's all kind of vague, but just knowing that. You know, when something happens or difficult or big, or I just know I'm going to go record as soon as I can.
Yeah.
And there's a trust in the process of, you know, it's just continually unfolding. There's always more to see, and I get as clear as I can in this moment about this, and that's great.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if this is what you're pointing to, Michael, but for me, it's quiet confidence. That's what grows with practice. That I don't, that pretty much whatever happens, there's a way in which I can be with it, because that's what I have spent my entire practice life training for. It might not be graceful, it might not be perfect, but, and if it isn't, there's a place that will assist me to be okay with that too.
Right.
That to me is the gift of long time practice. I know I'm going to make that shot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not afraid that I don't know how to make the shot.
Right. Yeah, that is totally my experience too. To me, the beauty of that that comes from practice is it's a, well, you know, the guide says, you know, the person in the room who's most aware has the most power. And I sense that. But what comes with practice is a humility, or a, you know, this power is not going to be used in evil, you know, ego ways as best I can do that. Which to me is the best kind of power.
Yeah.
You know, power as a force of good, or for clarity or presence.
It's like water. It's the Lao Tzu, right? It finds the lowest level.
Yeah.
It's not ambitious.
Right.
But therefore it can go anywhere.
Yeah, it just goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else before we go?
So, yeah, just real quick, let's see if it'll come back. That part about the you know, going into the down the tunnel or into the room. So that what seems so clear is that the I'm aware. I'm aware I'm taking these steps. I'm aware I'm afraid. I'm aware I'm going into this terrible room. But what we're talking about is the expanded awareness. So we can be, that's why we can think we're aware, because we are. But there's that place of expanding it to seeing the whole.
Yeah.
And that just struck me, and it's such a good image to remember.
That's,
you know,
right.
That, well, I'm aware, but I'm missing something.
I'm
obviously
aware of very limited scope.
Yeah. I'm aware I'm miserable or something.
Yes.
Well, I'm really aware, you know. But there's the whole missing.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, it's lovely for us to use that language, right? Because you can have a lot of attention on a limited scope of awareness,
yeah.
Which is what identification is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm aware of identified. Yeah.
Yeah, right? And
yeah.
So as soon as the awareness expands, you almost have to have attention on, well, it's like the image that we play with a lot is the aperture of the camera.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? How much is in the field of light.
Right. And such a gift, though, even with that sliver of awareness, when you just said that, I was seeing how, okay, I'm aware, I'm identified. Well, we know, you know, we just grab the recorder, even that.
That's what we train for, right?
Well, and even that just grabbing it is one big expansion, and
yes.
To use it would be, you know, open up the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it's just interesting how, because I have a friend that says, I'm present, I'm always present, I've just always been present. She's never practiced anything about present. I don't know if she even knows what presence is, but I'm glad she feels present. But we can be present, but then we can be
present.
Yeah. I mean, it's just all really interesting, and that's why we're practicing to expand that.
That's right.
What did you call
the
it?
Aperture. Yeah. Well, because at some level, when I don't know anything about anything around practice, all I know is what I'm experiencing as either identification or expanded awareness. I don't know what that means, right? But with practice, when we have all these frameworks that are given to us, that's why I pick up the recorder when you're miserable. I keep picking up the recorder when I'm miserable, because when I'm miserable, I want awareness to register to remind me to pick up the recorder. I'm training the awareness to be available to me in a collapsed state of identification.
Yeah.
So that when whatever happens in a collapsed state of identification, there's sufficient awareness to expand the, to know that I'm in a collapsed state, I'm in it, and therefore I need to pick up the recorder.
Yes.
Right. That's what we're doing all the time.
Yeah.
Always training awareness to be available in collapsed awareness.
Yes, yes. And the gift is, I mean, when you said that, I realized that, you know, before practice, there was no sense of identification.
That's right.
Who would ever heard of that?
Exactly.
You know, I was just miserable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
or afraid, and then we even say, that's a big deal to say, well, I'm afraid. But, I mean, it's just a whole different ballgame with practice.
Well, and that's why we use vocabulary and frameworks, because
mm-hmm.
instead of saying, I'm afraid, I can say, I'm watching the voices tell me, haha,
mm-hmm.
I'm projecting this, what I'm believing is this.
Mm-hmm.
Now I am describing the process of fear,
mm-hmm.
which implies I cannot be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come to practice, the reason we do the five processes is to give ourselves a vocabulary to describe a process of collapsed awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look to say something, I'm doing that as a way to disidentify.
Right, and which is so different from just being
I'm afraid.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can't do anything
in that place.
No,
and you don't even know you can do anything.
That's exactly right.
So, gosh, we're very lucky.
Very lucky. Good way to end the evening. Thank you so much.